This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, editor of the website TV Worth Watching, sitting in for Terry Gross. Today's guest is musician Sam Baker. He has a new CD called Land of Doubt. It's his first since his album called Say Grace in 2014, which is when Terry Gross interviewed him about his music and his remarkable story. Sam Baker didn't become a professional songwriter until after he almost died in a terrorist attack. In 1986, when Baker was 31, he was on a train in Peru, traveling to Machu Picchu, when a bomb planted by the Peruvian terrorist group The Shining Path exploded in the luggage rack above him. The people he was sitting with were killed. His body was torn apart. He suffered a brain injury, severe hearing loss, and required over 15 reconstructive surgeries. And somehow, during his long recovery, songs started coming to him. Several of his songs related directly to the attack and his near death. Many of his songs are like short stories written in the voices of characters. Some of his most beautiful songs are like hymns. NPR music critic Robert Christgau described Baker's music as, quote, simultaneously beautiful and broken, like cracked crockery, unquote. Baker's fourth album, Say Grace, was named by Rolling Stone as one of the 10 best country albums of 2013. From that album, here's one of his story songs. It's called The Tattooed Woman.
The tattooed woman, she sleeps in my bed. The ink is dry, the dogs are fed. The moon is safe, her face is red. The tattooed woman, she sleeps in my bed. Her hair is black, her skin is white. She's pulled the sheets around her tight. I wish I had the right to comfort her as a husband might. Rain is coming, that's how it feels. 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 Now I lay me down to sleep, the Lord out wandering with his sheep. There's oh, so many souls to keep. Now I lay me down to sleep.
Sam Baker, welcome to Fresh Air. I really love that song. Is this a story about you or about someone else?
It's about someone else, but there was a tattooed woman who was asleep in my bed, and the merge in that is but there's an old hymn, an old Protestant hymn called Let All Mortal Flesh Keep Silent. And I don't know the rest of the words. I mean, the rest of the words could be almost anything. I love the title, and I love the melody. And the melody goes back to the 1600s. It's a French melody that was taken by someone who created that hymn. So what happened was that was an amalgam of really two songs. And the hymn part, I think, sounds almost like an Algerian chant. I don't know if I can even do it. It's like la 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 la.
I didn't realize that was like an old melody that you borrowed.
Yeah, that's probably 400 or 500 years old.
So many of your songs are stories about other people,
uh-huh,
about other characters. Some of your songs are about your story,
yes,
and they're just incredible songs. So I want to talk a little bit about your story and play some of those autobiographical songs. So let's talk about the terrorist explosion that blew your body up. Where were you going when you were on that train in Peru? What were you intending to do?
I had gone to South America with friends, and we were young. I guess I was almost 32, and we walked around and looked. And we went to Cusco at a time of a celebration called the Inti Rami, I think it's what it's called, and where a priest cuts the heart out of a llama and holds it up and looks into the sun and is able to tell what is in store, what the future holds. And then we got, the next day, got aboard a train for Cusco, which is where Machu Picchu, the beautiful ruins, are. And someone put a bomb in a backpack, a red backpack, on the car that I got on. And I was sitting by a German boy. His mother was across from him, and his father was knee to knee with me. You know, two people sit facing two people, and the bomb was on the luggage rack right above this poor woman's head. So the German boy and I talked for a second, and then I looked back, and the bomb went off. And it was probably not that good of a bomb because so much of the blast went straight up. I think if they had been able to flatten the blast pattern, it would have killed a lot. I think that day it killed six or seven, different accounts say, but it did kill the woman. This boy's mother killed her real fast and really violent, and killed his father real fast and real violent, and then it killed him, but it took a number of hours for him to die. I didn't see that. I had a cut artery, and you know, had blown my ears in, and I was in a bad place. I thought I had a heart attack, and then an external voice, English, said, "You are accompanied by death. Death accompanies those around you." And at that point, I knew that that they were dead or dying, and I was dying.
But you heard a voice saying that?
I say I heard a voice. You know, my lungs had collapsed because I was so close to the blast wave of the bomb. So I panicked initially when I couldn't breathe. And then this voice was, I say it's a voice, but it was more like a cellular, something that passed through on a cellular level so that it quieted all the, you know, at that point I became, I guess, willing to die, because I said to myself, well, if this is death, let's get about it.
I want to play the song that you wrote about the explosion. It's called Steel, as in the passenger train.
Right.
It's just I don't know. The song leaves me kind of speechless, but it describes the experience in poetry. So let's hear Steel. It's from Sam Baker's first album, Mercy, which was released in 2004.
Sitting on the train to Machu Picchu, passenger car explodes. There's not enough time to say goodbye. There's not enough time to know what's gone wrong. God have mercy, I believe my heart has failed. Smoke rises through a hole in the roof. The dead say fare thee well. I swear, doctor, don't you have anything like morphine for this pain? I swear, Jesus, take me now, cause I'm about to go insane. I'm looking back at the world as one who is leaving in a dream come right out of hell. The dead say fairly well. No one is just an observer. The same bell tolls for the served and the server, for the strong, the weak, for the weary, for the brave. For everybody, right, come judgment day. Cause trains explode, steel flies, and the sisters ring the Catholic bells. Rises through a hole in the roof. The dead say, fare thee well.
That's Steel from my guest Sam Baker's first album, which was released in 2004. The album was called Mercy. And that song describes his experience when he was on a train in Peru and the terrorist group, The Shining Path, had placed a bomb in the overhead compartment and blew up.
It was just like a luggage rack. It wasn't even, you know, it was an old narrow gauge rail, so it was, And I think the rack itself, you know, that the suitcase sat on, that became the shrapnel. I don't know if they even packed the thing with shrapnel. I mean, they could have killed the whole car full of people.
There's a line in the song, "Smoke rises through a hole in the roof, the dead say fare thee well." Did you see the smoke rising? Were you lying
on your
back at that time?
I didn't. You know, what I did do is when I finally got to Houston after a long, complicated rescue, the U.S. Air Force came in. And when I was in Houston, I had an old friend come in, and he said that I told him that I saw those things. But by that time, I had gangrene and renal failure.
And did the image come from your friend telling
it
you
came from
that
my
you told
image
your friend?
Telling me that I had told him. That's where that image came from.
That's really interesting.
Well, and he said that the dead... I went into whatever the tunnel of light is. I actually went into that, which was an interesting... It really was a light of shades of gray, and the light at the end was a tiny light, really not very big, but it was a light that was... It was like a returning, like I was returning and becoming some sort of liquid light. It was more like an ecstatic return, but ecstasy is not the right word. It was like a cellular becoming of something more powerful and beautiful than anything I've ever experienced. So I don't think we have a word for it. We don't have a word for the. And you know, I grew up in a small prairie town. You know, going to church every Sunday up until I was 17 or so. Part of that was the heaven, hell, and this was only when I came out of it. I started thinking about, you know, it was a non-denominational dying. It's not like someone shows up to say, "Have you?"
That's a great phrase, a non-denominational dying, which leads me to wonder: did you sense of faith or no faith, or of a spiritual life or not having a spiritual life, to change after that experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think the you know, when I went into it, I was young. You know, I was a whitewater boatman, and we were climbing. It was a young person's life, full of adventure and curiosity. And after that, you know, I went through so many surgeries, and I was around so many people that were in such terrible pain and in worse shape than I was. Yeah, something changed. One thing that changed was the sense that all suffering is universal, that we suffer, you suffer, that we all do. Or this separation we sometimes do by whatever we do it for, by religion or whatever. I think if we can all, me especially, what I learned, I think, was empathy, and the faith that I got was the faith in us as a group, as humans.
There's another song I want to play. This is a song about suffering, about things that don't heal.
Right.
The song is called Broken Fingers. And, I mean, your fingers were broken.
Right. Well, what happened was shrapnel came in. You know, my hand was vertical, and so shrapnel came down and cut a channel down across the top of my hand. But, you know, for the most part, they just wrapped it up because, you know, I had so many other things that were life-threatening, and this was not life-threatening. So it was bandaged up for weeks and weeks, and when they finally unwrapped it, it was a mess. It was awful.
So let's hear the song Broken Fingers. Do you want to say anything to introduce it about writing it?
I was stumped. I didn't know how to describe. How do you describe instant death? You know, how you and I are in this beautiful, quiet room, and then the world comes in. And really, even now, Terry, I think I write around it. I don't know that I've ever been able to write directly into the core of it. And that's where that song, you know, I was trying to, I've never been able to get at peace with the boy that was killed. You know, the
boy sitting next to you.
The boy sitting next to me. I mean, and that's when I was, and it was years after the thing happened that and then I got that, how long? How long ago was 16 years? Every day. Of course, I know. And then that goes in to some things don't heal. I mean, some things I've had to learn to live with.
And I love the way when you sing it, especially the second time, the emphasis is on the do, and some things don't heal.
They don't.
Yeah.
They don't, and they don't close. There's no closure. There's no healing. There's no closure. It stays open for forever. And I think once you know, like somebody killing that kid, or you know, those are things that stay open. I don't know that the universe heals those things.
So let's hear the song. Yep. It's called Broken Fingers, and it's on one of Sam Baker's previous albums, which is called Pretty World.
Well, how long? How long ago? It's 16 years every day. Course I know. Forget his face. Of course I don't. It's like a crystal vase, these broken fingers. Some things don't heal. I can't wake up from a dream when the dream is real. These broken fingers. Forget his eyes, his silhouette. Of course I don't. Of course I don't forget there are blue eyes, a silhouette. There is a debt, it's a debt I don't forget. These broken fingers, some things don't heal. I can't wake up from a dream when the dream is real. These broken fingers.
That's Sam Baker, songwriter and singer, from his album Pretty World. A couple of lines in the song we just heard, I can't wake up from a dream when the dream is real. After the explosion, the Shining Path bomb was planted in the train that you were traveling on in Peru. Did you think it was a dream?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it was awful. It was surreal. The moment it went off, from that moment forward, it was as if there was a different alternative universe, because I went from a living, connected thing, just like you and I have today, to something that was so completely inward, you know, where I couldn't breathe, and then the voice came, and then I went in and was moving down the tunnel, and then that went black, and then I woke up and saw they were sewing me up, and the guy showed me the thread that was had some sort of silver-like lubricant, and at that moment I thought, well, this is awful. I'm gonna go back to being unconscious.
This was in Peru still?
Yeah, still in Peru. That was in Cusco. The military evac'd us down to Lima, where we stayed. And the people in Lima were really lovely. The doctors were great, but you know, there was not much they could do. Gangrene had set in, and I had renal failure. So it was, and gangrene is a really distasteful sort of thing. I mean, it smells bad. It's, you know, I had gone from climbing and healthy to being on the verge of death, and death in a smelly, bloody way, and surrounded by people that were beat up too, and just having left the dead behind, we evac'd out and left the dead in Cusco.
In one of your songs, you have the line, "Everyone is at the mercy of another one's dream."
Right,
and I don't know if you intended that to be about yourself, but that's how I hear it.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You were at the mercy. All the dead people from this bomb blast were at the mercy of this group's dream of what they were trying to accomplish.
Exactly. I mean, that the whole first record was so I could set that line up, so I could say, we are all at each other's mercy. Once again, empathy, empathy, empathy. We are all at each other's mercy. And if you have this dream of destruction, it's not going to come out well for all of us. And then, but see, at the first one I did that, and then did that because I felt like that was such an important thing to say. We followed that up with an 8-minute really beautiful rondo that says, you know, this is like a reflecting pool after that one line.
Well, the line is in your song Angels, which is from your album Mercy. Why don't we hear that song? And do you want to demonstrate anything on your guitar about that song?
Yeah, I can. You know, there were so many people that rushed in to help. They saved me and they saved a lot of other people, and it was at risk to themselves. And then the Peruvians in Lima were so unbelievable. And, you know, I got blood transfusion after blood transfusion. I had holes everywhere. The back of my arm was gone. You know, my leg was open for like a foot and a half. They were pouring blood in as fast as it poured out. People were had so little regard for their own safety for their own well-being. And that I found that all the way through. All the way through. The life flight, I mean, the military evac guys, the docs. And it was just... And, it was, you know, the only way I could think of to describe how those beautiful impulses was that song, Angels Flutter Around a Heart. Love can heal, they softly call. When trouble comes to the ones she loves, her angels come. And I'm not sure what, you know, the paintings of angels with wings. I see this more as all those incredible people that they're whatever this well of goodness that's in people. It just poured out.
So let's hear your song Angels from your album Mercy. And this is the song that has the line, "Everyone is at the mercy of another one's dream."
Angels flutter around a heart. Love can heal, they softly call. When trouble comes to the ones she loves, her angels come. They ease our suffering, they heal our pain. Her angels come like healing rain. Love and angels conquer all like rain. Her healing angels fall. Love and angels conquer all. Her healing angels softly call, amen. Call a truce, call a war. Everyone is a bastard, everyone is a whore. Everyone is a saint, everyone is redeemed. Everyone is at the mercy of another one's dream. She is as suffering heals pain. Her angels come like healing rain. Love and angels conquer all like rain. Her healing angels fall. Love and angels conquer all. Her healing angels softly call, amen.
That's a song, Angels, from the album Mercy by my guest, Sam Baker. In 1986, he was one of the victims of a train bombing by the Peruvian guerrilla terrorist group, The Shining Path, and he barely survived that. And several of his songs are about that experience, including the one that we just heard. You know, the song refers to healing angels. Those were people that you thought of as being your healing angels?
Yeah, I mean, I think
the people who helped you in the hospital?
They were so amazing. Whatever goodness they brought was so powerful.
Did you have painkillers that were healing angels too?
Well, I did, but those particular healing angels, their wings darkened pretty fast.
How fast?
Fast.
Right. Was it hard to get off of them?
Yes. Yeah, I had trouble. Right. I was on so many pain meds and also booze, alcohol. You know, it's the recovery is a mix of pain, surgery, and boredom, and that's a terrible place when you have access to pain meds.
Right. How did you start writing songs? Like you weren't a full-time musician before the bombing. You had a bank job, I think?
I did. I had a lot of different jobs. I worked with the bank examiners, who were wonderful people, who gave me a job really when I came back and could barely walk. And, you know, my mind was scattered for a long time. I couldn't remember nouns. I had to work to come up with the word for chair. I would have to say that thing you sit in. What is that called? But yeah, I did. I had a ton of jobs. And I was writing these long narrative things, and it was, Terry, it was boring. It was like, and then this happened, and then this happened, blah, blah, blah. And it was only when music came, and it really was that song Steel, when the music came to Sitting on the Train. When it had the color of chords, then it began to make sense to me.
So you hadn't written melodies before?
I had, but they were awful. I'd written really... You know, I played in my 20s, and it was fun, and I played with friends, and we did some bar stuff, and it was in, I would do covers, and I wrote really awful, dreadful stuff. I mean, I love you, why don't you love me, or you love me, what's wrong with you? You know, just really post-coming-of-age stuff that wasn't done very well.
Because you were such a physical person before mm-hmm. the bombing, you know, mountain climbing and...
Yeah, carpentry, yeah.
Carpentry, yeah. You were forced to have a very unphysical life outside mm-hmm. of pain. I guess pain was the most physical part of
right.
your life, but
right.
certainly no real mobility for a while. No. So did that force you into having a more expanded interior life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and spending all the time with people that were really, you know, I spent a lot of time in ICU right at the beginning, and then later on, you know, I was in recovery and then rooms. So I went from an exterior life of a young man to the interior life of an old man who was mostly deaf, couldn't walk, with brain damage. And so the things I could focus on were the things and the people that were close by, and so many of the people that were close by were really in deep trouble. Some much more trouble than I was physically. You know, there were a lot of people that bells would go off, and you know, they would wheel people out. So that became the interior life is how to process the new world.
During your recovery, when you were developing more of an interior life because you couldn't do much physically,
right.
Were you reading much?
No, not at first, because I really couldn't focus.
Couldn't focus,
yeah,
and couldn't process it, probably.
Right.
And what about music? Was that helpful?
I couldn't really hear music. I mean,
oh,
I
because
was
you were still deaf.
Yeah, and also I've got a really, really loud ringing in my head. It's called tinnitus, which...
still have that?
I do. It's the loudest thing in the room right now. So to listen to stuff... once they replaced my eardrums, I could start listening.
They replaced your eardrums?
Yeah, both of them. They did this one once and this one twice.
Since you still have the tinnitus and it's mm-hmm. still pretty loud, when music comes to you, how do you hear it above the noise? Or is it so interior it doesn't matter?
It's got to be interior almost, and unless I turn it up real loud. If it's just in a room like this, it comes through like an old transistor radio, like a single small speaker with a lot of... a long time ago, TVs, when they went off the air, there was a high-pitched tone. I don't know if you remember
that.
Yeah,
I do.
If you combine two or three of those tones in an atonal fashion, that's what the tinnitus is. So I don't really take pleasure in the beauty of sound right now. You know, like the sound of a cello or you know, I don't... I mean, there was a time where I think I really loved... just the quality of sound, and now I don't really hear the quality of sound that much. I have to, there has to be something in it that I feel, something that pulls me in.
But when you're hearing music that you're writing, when a mm-hmm. song is coming to you, does it matter that you have the tinnitus? Does the volume of that affect?
No, because it comes from a different place. Mm-hmm. It's sound coming inward out as opposed to sound coming outward in.
Right. You grew up... in Texas?
Uh-huh.
In a small town?
Small town.
Your mother played organ at the church?
Yes.
So I assume you heard a lot of church music when you were growing up.
A lot.
And there's still a lot of, you know, references to Hallelujah and Mercy and Grace.
And Grace, right.
In your songs. And some of your songs sound like hymns.
Uh-huh.
So there's a song called Go in Peace.
Right.
That's inspired by a 19th century hymn.
Right. Come Thou Fount.
Yeah, so I really love this song, and I was wondering if you actually remember the hymn that it's based on.
See, I don't. I know that I remember that. I love that line, "Safely to arrive at home," and the melody is. And you know, I changed it more as a little thing that says, "Be careful when you go out into the night." You know, there's go in peace, go in kindness, go in love. You know, I don't co-write much, but that was with a friend of mine, Liz Rose. We started that, and it was just a, you know, it's like 1 minute that says, "Be careful as you go into the night." You know, take care of yourself. Watch the road.
I want to play that because it's really so beautiful.
Go in peace, go in kindness, go in love, go in faith, leave the day behind us. Day is done. Go in grace. Let us go into the dark, not afraid, not alone. Let us hope by some good pleasure safely to arrive at home. Let us hope by some good pleasure safely to arrive at home.
That's Sam Baker from Say Grace. And Sam, so that line, "safely to arrive at home," that's borrowed from the old hymn.
That's borrowed from the old hymn, yeah. But the whole, I think the vibe, the feel of it is borrowed from, I mean, I love the feel of the hymn, even if I don't know it.
You know, but this is reminding me, when you were nearly killed in the bomb blast in Peru on the passenger train, and you were in that, like, tunnel of death, you saw the light.
Right.
And you described what you were experiencing as an ecumenical death. There wasn't like a God or an individual religion at the other end of the tunnel.
It was like, howdy, everybody.
But that reminds me of the kind of hymns that you write, like what we just heard. There's no particular God. There's no particular religion
That doesn't feel right to me. It feels right that there's a great welcoming. You know, when I was in that place, that's what it seemed to me, a great welcoming. And it was not just restricted to me. I thought it was a great welcoming that would quite likely be provided to everybody.
Did you feel that way before the bomb?
Oh, Terry, before the bombing, I don't know that I took the time to think through much. You know, it was a very physical life. And I think that my world was so engrossing just on a physical level, I don't know that I thought about religion or faith or really that much. I mean, it was fun. It was fun to run rivers and climb mountains.
Because the bomb blast radically altered all your senses.
Right.
But probably most especially your hearing. Mm-hmm. But also your ability to think. I mean, you said you couldn't think of the names. You couldn't think of nouns. So this had to affect, like, your ability to write.
Right.
I think one of the things that's very outstanding about your songs is that, you know, as a singer, you have a limited range. You don't have, like, two octaves that do or three octaves or...
Three notes.
you have a relatively small range, but like Leonard Cohen, who has a relatively small range, like, every note that you write, you get something, you get meaning from or emotion from. And so you use each of those notes to great effect. The language is spare, too.
Right.
It's not, like, overly wordy and descriptive. It's not dense in the way, say, a Bob Dylan lyric is very dense. And I'm wondering if you think any of that relates to the way your thought processes work since the blast, that everything maybe needs to be pared down and simplified.
Right,
take out the noise. Take out what's extraneous.
It has to be. I have to do things as simple as I can do them. And I have to find, you know, like chair. I have to look for words. I have to spin through a ton of words, and I go through sometimes through a descriptive process. And that exercise takes a lot of time to really winnow all the words out till I can find a word that I think works.
If it's that difficult, why do you want to do it?
I have to. I don't have a choice.
Why don't you have a choice?
I don't. I mean, I think once the voice came back and said, "Do something," I think I feel compelled to do something, even if I don't know to what end. I think that my job is to reveal as much as I know and hope that it's helpful to somebody.
Did you feel like you had any sense of purpose like that before the blast?
No, not at all.
A lot of veterans have gone through versions of what you went through. Veterans who were victims of, you know, landmines or IEDs. Yours was a bombing on a passenger train. But post-traumatic stress disorder is a big problem for veterans. Have you had that yourself?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had treatment for post-traumatic stress. When I first came back, I didn't understand post-traumatic, and I moved a lot. I mean, it wasn't a conscious decision. It was a subconscious thing that said, if I keep moving, it will be harder for them to set a bomb off that, you know, blows the windows in and kills me. So I moved a lot, and I was always watchful.
You mean moved?
Physically moved. I physically moved houses, physically moved apartments. And then when I'd move through any public space, I would look for any car that looked out of place, and I would also know where blast shields are. I would wonder about, like, looking out the window right now, is that a facade steel or is that real steel? I mean, who can hide behind, you know, what is it? Where is a blast shield? Where is the safe place?
What's your life like now, your daily life?
Simple. I live a pretty simple life. I try to live as regimented as I can live. You know, there are certain rituals I do. I get up and meditate at first. I try to eat as simple as I can eat, whether I'm on the road or not. I try to live a pretty simple, structured life where I can help people where I can help them and maybe be of service at times, not all the time, and hope for the best.
Is your income from music?
Mm-hmm.
And you make enough at music? Together?
It's enough. I mean, it's not. I don't live an extravagant life.
We should play another song, and this is another one that I think is just kind of like a poem that's a hymn, or a hymn that's a poem, totally non-denominational, but just about being in the moment and seeing the beauty of the moment. It's called Pretty World.
Oh right, yeah.
It's a great song.
It's a lovely song.
Did you want to say anything about writing it?
In those days of you know, once I was kind of getting through the worst parts of the surgeries and stuff, there were moments that were exquisitely beautiful. One of the things about seeing so much sorrow and so much suffering is that when there is an absence of suffering, you know, sunlight off a rose is incredible.
Sam Baker, I'm so happy I know your music now. I found out about it pretty recently, and I'm so glad that it's part of what I know. it's so good. Thank you so much for coming to Fresh Air.
Terry, thank you. This has been, it's been a pleasure.
So let's hear your song, Pretty World.
Before the sun, before the heat, before we untangle from our sheets, before this summer day unfurls, before the paper is dropped at the gate, before our coffee, before we are late, for dreams are lost like midnight pearls. Pretty world, pretty world, pretty roses, pretty smile, morning light, pretty eyes, lazy curls. Pretty world.
Singer-songwriter Sam Baker speaking to Terry Gross in 2014. His newest album, just released, is called Land of Doubt. On Monday's show, journalist Franklin Foer talks about his new article in The Atlantic. It's an investigative profile of Paul Manafort, the former Trump campaign manager who has been indicted in the Russia probe. The article is called American Hustler: How Paul Manafort Helped Corrupt Washington and Laid the Groundwork for the Subversion of American Politics. Hope you can join us.